Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and this is Nintendo World Report's Connectivity Podcast, episode 131, A Sweet Nice Family Game. We've got a couple segments for you on the show this week. First up is an interview with two of the voice actors from the original Pokemon series. After that, Justin and Neil discuss a couple of new games, NES Remix 2 and Mario Golf World Tour. And then at the end, we've got a bonus segment on PC gaming featuring Scott and Zach Kay. Enjoy the episode.
Hey Pokemon trainers, this is Ash Ketchum, and you're listening to Nintendo World Report!
Hey guys, Andrew Brown here with a very special segment. Last weekend I visited the Supernova Pop Culture Expo here in my hometown of Melbourne, where I had the rare privilege to chat with some amazing people, Veronica Taylor and Eric Stewart, stars of the original 8 seasons of the Pokemon series. I apologize in advance for the background noise, but I hope you guys enjoy the interview as much as I did. Welcome, listeners, to a very special segment on the radio that we've got today. I'm Andrew Brown, recording down here from Supernova Melbourne, and I have the great privilege to be joined by two extremely talented people, the original and the best voice actor for Ash Ketchum and May, the lovely Miss Veronica Taylor.
Oh, thank you. That's an awfully nice introduction. I'm happy to be here.
Wonderful, and I also have the original voice for both Brock and James from the 4Kids versions of Pokemon, Mr. Eric Stewart.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very sweet of you to say.
It's great to meet you both. You guys are my heroes.
Oh, thanks. It's nice to be here at Supernova.
Yes.
You can hear everything going on in the background.
Yes. Now, let's kick things off.
All right.
How did you guys get into voice acting, and are there any actors that are, or current voice actors that influenced your work?
Well, I used to work in a recording studio, and I did a lot of casting and production for radio and TV commercials, and I learned there, and I slowly started to be on the other side of the glass, from directing to acting, and I got some auditions in animation, and that's what led to my first role in Slayers as Gowrie.
Yeah, and I've always been an actor. I went to grad school, I went to college, both for acting. I really kind of lucked into getting an audition based on a recommendation, and then I've kind of networked my way through and to most of the things that I've been in so far.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Were you familiar with Pokemon before the English version of the show started?
I was not at all.
No, I actually was hired a year before the show started to just do the teaser for their pitch. And all I knew was it was called Pokemon, but it took 15 people in the room to decide how to pronounce it correctly.
Right, and then we still didn't pronounce it the right way.
Yeah, yes.
Right, we had to go back and redo that in a lot of the episodes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right. Did either of you have any idea how big the franchise was going to become?
Not at all.
Absolutely not.
Not at all.
No. Wow. So lucky to be part of it.
Yes.
I mean, as an actor, to have a job for 8 years, pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Have you played any of the games?
I played a little Pokemon Red, but otherwise, no. I do have a DS.
I'm a big gamer, but that's not really my style of game. I'm much more of a Gears of War, Borderlands 2 kind of player.
Oh, cool.
Raw, stuff like that, yeah. Pokemon is a sweet, nice family game. That's usually
that's
not
the
what
kind
I play.
I like.
I know.
Yeah.
Kind of inappropriate question then, but what are your favorite Pokemons?
Pikachu.
Squirtle.
Nice. As actors for the English version of a Japanese show, were there any nuances or personality traits that the original writers asked you to carry across to your roles?
Not really. I mean, there's some vocal qualities that they tried to match, but otherwise, you know, it was pretty straightforward in terms of how to approach those characters. I think the animation also dictated, you know, body language, stuff like that, especially with Pokemon.
So you were given a lot of freedom to ad-lib and make them your own characters?
Not ad-lib. No. The scripts were written by the writers, but in terms of, you know, how to approach the dynamic of the character, you know, especially if it's already been animated, you're playing against the physicality that they're doing on screen. So if they're wacky, it's kind of hard to be serious at that moment.
And in the beginning, they really wanted the voices to match more what they had done originally in Japan. And I think as the show settled in, then we were able to kind of let the characters grow into what they are now.
Yeah, I mean, the Japanese actor that plays James never did the wackiness that I brought to it. But I also think that's a cultural thing of what's funny there and what's funny here.
Yeah.
It's always going to be different in different cultures.
Right.
Absolutely. Would you be able to tell me about some favorite memories from working on Pokemon?
You know, it was a crazy show. We had very limited time to work on a lot of material. And so it was super fun to just kind of get in and be in this world that was so fun and colorful. But it was a lot of hard work.
Yeah. I mean, the memories, I just also working with people that I like.
Absolutely.
It was a tight group of people that worked on the show. All the original actors were all friends. And the whole production company at that time, it just was, it was a fun gig to have.
You know, everybody was working really hard and over 100% investing in it. And that I'm very proud of, to have been part of that.
That's awesome. I have to ask you, Eric, was it more fun to play Brock or James?
Well, James was more comedic, but Brock was a lot of fun. They're both equal, you know, I mean, they, for their own different styles of their personalities.
I also recently found out that you played the Magikarp salesman as well.
I did. They're a recurring character at least twice. Yes, that was interesting.
He was hilarious.
Yeah, I like him too. A good little cameo.
Yeah. Now that the voice cast has changed, do you ever check back on the events of the show to see what your characters are up to?
I don't. I miss it, for sure, but it's really hard for me to watch characters that I'm so familiar with and hear a voice that's so totally different. I'm not able to kind of do that. I miss the show, so...
Yeah, I don't even have that. I mean, I'm so busy with what I do that I couldn't see myself sitting down to watch that at this point.
And you really have to move on and keep working, so it's true, which is
and
very busy.
And the original series is back on Netflix.
I know!
Would you come back to the show if requested by Pokemon USA?
Well, absolutely, if there was an opportunity. There just has not been one. There's never been an invitation extended, and at this point I doubt that they're interested.
Sure. I don't think they're interested, but I mean, you know, those two characters would be fun to play, and I think the fans would appreciate it as well.
Definitely. So yes, is the simple answer.
Okay. Any advice that you would give to any fans that want to get into voice acting?
I think that what you have to do is, whatever it is that you want to do with your life, you've got to just go full on with that. If you want to be an actor, you've got to just be an actor, do everything you can. It's acting related. If you want to be an artist, you've got to draw and work on it, and I think that's the best way.
I agree. Don't dabble in your craft. Say, I kind of want to do this. If you really want to do it, you really need to make that investment. Time, money, energy, if that's your passion, don't just sort of dabble in, I want to kind of do this.
Whatever it is that you love. Because
exactly.
That's what else is life for, you know, do what you love. Do it 100% and have a great time.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's all we've got time for today.
Thank
you very much for taking the time to chat with me, both of you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure meeting you. Would you do a quick voice sample of Ash or James?
I can do one because I'm here with my best bud, Ash.
Oh, Brocco! That's awesome!
Have either of you seen Pikachu?
Hey, wait a minute. Pikachu? Pikachu!
we've got some games that came out on Nintendo systems or will be out soon, and we could talk about them. Those games are NES Remix 2, which will be out on a week by the time you hear this, and Mario Golf World Tour, which will likely not be out by the time you hear this, because it's out from when we're recording. I'm Neil Ronahan, and I viewed almost entirely Mario Golf World Tour, and we'll get to that in a little bit. And also with me is Justin Baker, who reviewed NES Remix 2 at the beginning of this week.
Hello.
Well, let's start with a game that, you know, we got to play it fully functional when we wrote the review. So how good is NES Remix 2? Is it first?
I like it so much better than the first game. The first game came out and there was a lot of fervor for it, and I feel like it was not so much for the game as much as it was for the fact that Nintendo was doing something like that.
Yeah, it was just like finally like a surprise. Like,
yeah,
that's what, like, I remember. Yeah. I think I like saw the video for it and whatever Nintendo Direct they revealed it in, and I was blown away by it. And it wasn't until like late that night that I even played it, but everyone was so excited. It was nice talking to people about, like, hey, did you hear about that surprising thing that Nintendo did? Because they hadn't done that in a while.
Yeah, and it was so much, I mean, it was a great idea, and it was so cool to see them do so. Because, I mean, they do get some flack, because they're like, oh, here's an old game that's a great game, but we've done nothing to it. It's the exact same game it was in 1985. Have fun. And it's like, well,
I mean, it's like, it's almost tying into another recent release, Super Mario Bros. 3 on Virtual Console on Wii and 3DS, and it's kind of funny seeing how that's, you know, this landmark big deal. And when they first announced it back 3 years ago, they said it was going to come to Wii U and 3DS Virtual Console. I kind of didn't really give a shit because I was like, yeah, I have it on Wii Virtual Console. I've played this game a million times.
Yeah, it's like they could do some. They don't even have to add anything substantial. They can add the tiniest. If they added just like a leaderboard. It would be amazing and blow everyone's mind. Yeah. But they don't, you know.
But even that, I bought both Super Mario 3 on Wii U and 3DS because that game came out, and I was just like, well, I want to play this game. I can get it for $1 on Wii U because I got it on Wii Virtual Console already, and I want to play it on the go.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, I have on the Wii U version, I'm going through every level in the Wii U Virtual Console version. And then on the 3DS, I used Warp Whistles to get it, but I haven't beaten it because that game's kind of fucking hard, especially when you haven't played it in like 5 years.
It is. I don't think in my life I've ever played through it without Warp Whistles.
Yeah, I've totally, like, I don't think I've ever done the entire game all the way through, like, every level, which is what I'm kind of intending to do. But I have
to get
it
your
money's
worth,
like,
so.
I'm playing, you know, like when I was a kid, you know, be playing with a friend and be like, hey, we haven't really been to World 6 before. Let's go see what that's about. And then you take the warp whistles to get to World 6.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think, is that the sky one? I think that's the sky one.
Yeah. The sky one sucks. I know that much.
Yeah, I don't like the sky one.
It sucks really
there's
hard.
There's a lot of cool world map stuff in Super Mario Bros. 3. And, I mean, yeah, we could probably have an entire podcast just talking about Super Mario Bros. 3 and the really interesting design decisions made in that game. But let's go back to talking about NES Remix 2.
Yes, which contains Super Mario Bros. 3.
Yeah, how cool is that? How are, like, the... Because it's got three platforming Mario games in it with Super Mario Bros. 2, Super Mario Bros. 2 The Lost Levels, and Super Mario Bros. 3. How do they kind of, like, I guess, fuse those together or make them unique? Because they are... I mean, they're different, but they are similar.
I mean, at first I was kind of bummed out. I was like, man, really? Three Mario games? There's that much filler in this? And then once you get into it, you realize, like, hey, every one of these is an incredibly different game. I mean, Mario 2 especially, but even 3 and Lost Levels play totally differently. And it was nice because I felt like there were a lot of levels where I was Peach or Toad from Mario 2 in Mario 3, and maybe I just played those ones a lot, but there were at least, I can think of at least three or four where it was Peach or Toad in Mario 3 as one of the remix levels, and it's really great, honestly. It's because both of them, especially being games that I played a ton of as a kid, and at first, I remember the first level, I was Peach in a Mario 3 level, and I didn't realize it was a Mario 3 level, because I'd played both games so much, and I'm sitting there like, how is this a remix? What are they remixing? This is just Mario 2, and I was like, oh, wait. No, this is Mario 3, with Peach in it. They're different enough that it makes it worthwhile. And it kind of gives you the full spread of NES Mario styles, because Lost Levels is very much just an iterative sequel on the original Super Mario
Brothers.
And also
hard as balls with invisible wind and all that fun shit.
It's ridiculous. But it's great seeing essentially every play style, every Mario play style on the NES present in one game and mixed around and thrown together. So at first I was kind of like, well, that's a lot of filler. They were just putting Mario in there because they had him laying around. And honestly, I'm glad they did, because it ended up being a great mixture of Mario games.
Now, in your review, you mentioned about how, you know, some games that are mediocre didn't really translate that well. That definitely the case with the first one, like, fuck Pinball, who gives a shit? Zelda 2 was the one that I kind of, when I heard it was going to be a part of this, I don't really like Zelda 2. I think there's a lot of good ideas, but I think the game is just broken.
Zelda 2...
So how does the remix, or the NES remix style, kind of help that game?
Well, Zelda 2 specifically was my one where I was like, hey, this it works better this way. Because Zelda 2 for me, I mean, when I said that, the game I was specifically thinking of was Kid Icarus. Kid Icarus does not play well. The moment-to-moment gameplay, it's just kind of janky and really hard and floaty feeling. It's just, mechanically, it's not a very solid game. And when you put it in NES Remix, it's still not a very solid game. I mean, I still have a soft spot in my heart for it, but it does itself no favors. Zelda 2 is one of those ones where the gameplay in Zelda 2 is really solid. Like, the actual combat gameplay, like fighting Darknuts, is still awesome. But whenever you take out the whole thing where it's this stupid adventure where you have to like be a psychopath to get all the way through it, and it takes a million billion hours or whatever, and you don't have to go through Death Mountain and all that, it makes it a lot more fun, because you can just enjoy the gameplay of it, which it's really solid gameplay and really in-depth combat for an NES game. And it brings that out, and it gives it a chance to shine, because you're not like, all right, now I need to go do this BS quest where I talk to this person and go here and I have to go over there.
I need to level up for 4 days and then die and lose my level up. And...
Right. It takes the grind out of it and just lets you enjoy the mechanics. And the mechanics in the game are solid. I mean, just being able to attack, like having two levels of attack, like your crouching attack and your regular attack, like that already makes it pretty complex for an NES game, combat-wise. Yeah. And most of the stuff is combat, and they seem to have been aware of that, and you get to enjoy that, and you don't have to have all the crap around it. They just kind of cut the crusts off of the Zelda 2 sandwich and gave you the nice, tasty center there.
You get the peanut butter and jelly without the crusts. Yeah. It's like those, shitty Smucker's things that don't have the...
That come frozen and they're horrible.
Crustables or something.
Yeah, it's like three PB&Js for $9.
Yeah.
And
how does Punch-Out work?
Punch-Out works well. A lot of Punch-Out is... I mean, it explains it, because I was kind of worried, because I'm not a Punch-Out guy. I don't know all the tricks and stuff, and good, you will do better than I did. But I was on the couch, and I was playing it, and I was like, all right, let's punch out. I don't know, like, all the little, the tells, you know, and it teaches you some of them, and does good about only having you fight guys that you've already learned the tells in previous fights. So, like, Piston Honda, like, one of them is you have
His
to
eyebrows.
Get... Yeah. Yeah, you learn it. It teaches it to you. And then two or three levels later, it's like, okay, get a TKO in one round with Piston Honda. And you're like, well, I already learned the trick. So if you know the trick, it's still fun. And if you don't, it teaches it to you. So it kind of takes that same thing from the game where you do have to kind of figure out the trick and remember it, but it puts it into a different package and makes it easier so that I don't have to look it up on the internet, which is what I always end up doing when I play Punch-Out. So the game that did shock me was a game I hated for years, and I was like, oh god, this is in it. Oh no. And it's Dr. Mario. And I played it, and it was just delightful. and it's my favorite game in all of NES Remix 2.
I the New York area guys, we saw this like a month or so ago, and we saw one of the Dr. Mario Remix levels where it like changes from color to black and white
to
like
the Game Boy one.
Basically,
yes.
The NES to the Game Boy version on the fly, and it's this total delightful mind bending thing.
Oh yeah. Most
because you need to basically look at the shades and be like, okay, that's red. Okay, no, this is the same color.
Right. And then he flips it. When he throws it, he flips it, and you're like, wait, when he flips it, does it change sides or does it stay the sides? It's that specific one. Most of the levels in these games, I'll play through them once and I'm like, okay, I'm done. Maybe if I got a horrible, like a one star, I'll go back. But
yeah, there's definitely some honor in NES Remix. You don't want to get a one star.
Yeah. You're like, one star. Oh, I may as well just not done it.
Unless it's like pinball.
Right.
Or something like that.
But that particular one, I went back and played it several times. And people would come over and I'd be like, oh, look at this one. It's really cool. It's my favorite. And all the Dr. Mario levels were just a lot of fun. So much so that it made me go buy Dr. Mario on DSiWare, which is terrible.
It's really? Terrible. Really? I don't remember that being bad. I am a Dr. Mario junkie to a certain degree. Although, I do have Dr. Luigi, but I find myself wondering what the fuck I was thinking. because the L-shaped Luigi thing is kind of novel, but that's about it.
Yeah, but it was great because going into it, I was like, oh, no. And I played it, and I was like, this is actually really awesome in these short bursts. And it's another example of something that's great in those short bursts. I mean, when you stack it up with like 400 viruses in there, like, oh, I don't really want to wade through that. But it's that essence of what makes it fun. And it sets the puzzles up in such a way that you intuitively learn to stack it up so that they fall and you can get, you know, cascading viruses knocked out.
Yeah.
So it was really cool. And that was my favorite remix in the whole game, was that one with the Game Boy pills. They went out there and I remember I was playing it and I was like, all right, what's the remix? And he throws it out there and I was like, no! And it blew my mind across the room. It was amazing.
So I guess any other standouts as far as like the roster of 16 games?
Not Wario's Woods.
Oh fuck you! this is troubling because I've always really loved Wario's Woods, and it's just because for me it's a puzzle mechanic that you don't really see ever get used again, where you're controlling a character in the puzzle environment.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Kirby was a lot of fun. It had some really cool remixes. Kirby, oddly enough, was really hard. I mean, you go into it and you're like, oh, it's Kirby, but it was actually pretty tough.
I can just float the air to win, right?
Right. And then you're like, oh,
you need to suck up this enemy and get this power.
The Kirby ones were really, they had a lot of different, they were varied. Which was really cool because obviously Kirby has tons of powers and does tons of cool different stuff. So I think they had a lot more to play with than that. Whereas like the Zelda ones, like, all right, now kill this enemy. Now kill these enemies without getting hit. No, now kill this guy. Kirby it was able to expand outwards a little bit and do some cooler things with Kirby that I enjoyed.
I'm very excited to play more of this game.
Yes, that's excellent.
Before we go over to Mario Golf, how about the bonus modes? Because there's Super Luigi Brothers and then the championship.
Super Luigi Brothers is pretty fun. The big thing for me was the challenge mode, and it's essentially gives you 5 minutes on the timer, and you play through three challenges. Mine were, what was it? It was I don't know if they're the same all the time. To be honest, I believe
that's what I think, because what is it? It's Super Mario Brothers.
It was Mario 3. 1, Mario 3, and then Dr. Mario.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's only accessible if you have the first one.
Right.
NES Remix.
And mine never changed.
I don't know if they're going to update that as time goes on. I hope they do.
Me too.
Think that would be really neat.
But they were a lot of fun. It's that same speedrun mentality where you're trying to figure out the best path through there because it's always the same. And it's sort of more freeform than the traditional levels in the game because it's like the first thing is like, all right, get 25 coins. We don't care how you do it. We don't care how many levels you have to go through to do it. As long as you're within the time limit, just keep on trucking. So it was a little more liberating, and it allowed you to sort of figure out the best path, whereas most of the games in the actual NES remakes were like, okay, do this as quickly as you can. This is more like, here you go, figure it out. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the challenge mode. And like I said, mine never changed, but it didn't really get old, honestly, because you've pretty much just got the whole game to explore in a 5-minute window anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't really heard anything on if that's going to change ever. Like, I mean, it would be pretty cool if, I mean, who knows what their plans are for the NES Remix series going forward.
Right.
But if they did have something like, you know, every couple weeks, they're like, oh, hey, now it's 3 more games in a challenge mode.
I was hoping it would be like random, or maybe it would change each time. But every time I played, and again, mine was before the game came out, so I don't know if maybe it's different now.
Maybe they will change and update it. I guess we'll find out. I don't know if it's going to be a midnight launch or not. I kind of hope it is, because a half an hour away from that.
There you go.
I might play that tonight. But what I have been playing, other than dreaming about NES Remix 2, is Mario Golf World Tour.
Oh, man.
Which, so far I put, well, right now on the site we have a review in progress, because the online did not go live until today. This is Thursday, April 4th. That's when the embargo was, so I basically just wrote a review without a score for the offline portion. And the offline portion is very fun. However, it's kind of shorter, because you have that single player RPG style mode. I would say it's a better single player mode than was in Mario Tennis Open, but it's still closer to that than it is the full fledged RPG mode of the older portable games. Which is a little disappointing, but still, the Castle Club mode has you going around as your me, exploring this club, talking to characters, and getting new gear to put your me in, getting costumes to make them look like a filthy cross-dresser. I mean, it's just weird seeing my me dressed up as Daisy, going up to Daisy and being like, hey, what's up? And then Daisy's just like, what did you do to me?
It's a quest. You're finding yourself.
Yeah.
You know, now, because what I've not played any, I played Mario Golf, the Game Boy Color one. I downloaded it and got bored with it immediately. But I'm so excited for Mario Golf, because the whole world of Mario sports games that are not Mario Kart, if you could call that a sports game, I guess, kind of, sort of,
it's,
maybe.
It like technically is, but not like, I don't know.
Maybe.
I think because the idea of Mario Kart racing in the way it is in the game doesn't really have an analog, whereas like
I guess that's true.
Tennis do.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I guess there is like go-kart racing, but like, I'm sorry, I'm not throwing around fucking blue shells when I'm going to go-kart.
I'm not killing other people on the track. No one is dying.
Granted, I don't also hit a golf ball and have it like bounce off a Wiggler's head, but
right. So the whole world of Mario sports games, I'm just now getting into it, because growing up I could have cared less. So I'm very excited for Mario Golf. Now, content wise, I never picked up Mario Tennis because it was full price and by all accounts was incredibly light on content.
Like, I think there's just kind of a problem with tennis games, because like, what more can you do with tennis?
Right. You've got the, like, court, and then what else?
You got some challenges, you got some tournaments. That's it. Like, that's, I don't really know what else you can do with that outside of having like a full-on career mode or something, which, I mean, I still thought tennis was good. I believe when I reviewed that one when it came out, 2 years ago, I think I gave it like a 7.5. Like, I enjoyed that game. I ended up putting in like close to 15 hours into it. Played a lot of local multiplayer with other NWR staffers at E3 that year. But Mario Golf, to me, blows Mario Tennis Open away.
Awesome.
A lot of that has to do with me liking golf more than tennis. I think it's just a more interesting sport to play in a video game.
Well, and then, like you said, you get the set piece moments where it's like, check out this awesome course.
Yeah. And the way it works in Castle Club, which is, this is kind of my big beef with Castle Club, is that when you go through it, your goal in that, which I didn't realize until after I finished it, is just there are 3 18-hole courses, and you have tournaments in each one. Once you win those 3 tournaments, then essentially you beat Castle. And those 3 18-hole courses are, you know, like the grass course, the desert course, the mountain course. So it's like none of like the cool, like kind of goofy Mario stuff.
Right.
And
the fun
those
ones
are present in Castle Club, where like you unlock them by playing a different part of the game. There's a challenge mode. You get star coins for doing these. I mean, I wouldn't call them NES Remix style challenges, but it is that kind of like, oh, here, go to this hole, and then you need to do some, like, you know, hit the golf ball through rings, and then you know, make it in par, or, you know, get these coins, when get X amount of coins as you beat these three holes,
mm-hmm.
or do these three holes as fast as you can, finish them under 2 minutes. Which those are really fun. And there's about, I think it's 8 or 10 challenges per course. And there are a total of 8 courses you can do that with. That's kind of neat. And that's the way that you unlock all the Mario World courses, which there's a Peach one, a Yoshi one, there's an underwater one, there's a pretty cool Wiggler one.
The underwater one looked amazing.
Yeah, the underwater one's really cool because it's like the water physics are kind of subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, obviously, you know, you're underwater.
Yeah, I wondered how they do that. I was like, well, honestly, you'd hit it like a foot and a half and it would not be fun at all. So I was like, well, surely they're
because it's I guess it's not exactly like underwater physics would be in real life, but they just make it like a little bit floatier, that like there is a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you approach the holes differently. And I think that's what I like about a lot of the different holes on the courses, is that they make you do things differently.
Right.
Like for the Bowser one, like there's fucking lava everywhere. So you need to be really deliberate about where you be off and where you aim. Whereas in, like, you know, some of the easier courses, you can just kind of like, all right, I'm going to line up, going to try to hit the shit 300 yards.
Right.
That's it. But then in Castle Club, like, beat those three tournaments. That's it.
Mm.
There are, now that I can actually play online, online adds a hell of a lot to it. There's tournaments out the yin yang that you can play, and you unlock all sorts of stuff for it. I competed in a world tournament in which I won a bunch of Game Boy gear. So now I have like Game Boy gloves, Game Boy shoes, Game Boy visor.
Excellent. You look just like that kid from that old Nintendo Power ad with all his Game Boy stuff.
I haven't put them on yet. I literally, the last thing that I did in that game was play that tournament, because I'm like, oh, I can get Game Boy shit. All right, I'm in.
Yeah. So what I'm hoping for, and I've tried to stay blissfully ignorant about the game because I was just so excited, and then they delayed it and broke my heart. How many cool little secrets have they stuck into all of the Mario World courses? Sort of a la Mario Kart, where there's always some sort of little trick or thing off to the side.
Honestly, it's not that they're not there. It's just that I haven't noticed too many of them, and that's probably because I'm not looking close enough.
Mm-hmm.
Been focusing on trying to get, you know, the lowest scores I can. There have been like a couple, like, kind of like, I have noticed some pipes. I haven't successfully landed in one of the pipes. Usually it just winds up with me like bouncing off the side of it and fucking things up. I mean, there are a lot of stuff, like, just some of the courses themselves are beautiful, because mm-hmm. especially there's a Donkey Kong one that's very much inspired by Donkey Kong Country Returns, so it has all those enemies and those characters around there, like the weird pillars that scream and then fall down,
mm-hmm.
like, you don't want to hit your ball anywhere near those guys, or, right. And I think it's in the Donkey Kong one and the Bowser one, there's, like, basically bombs that if you hit your ball too close to it, then it's going to blow up. And it could help you if you're in the right spot.
Right.
It doesn't.
So more still just set piece than fully interactive, crazy Mario World stuff, which I guess
like,
could
more
make
like
it
interesting,
unplayable.
Interesting Mario-themed obstacles.
Right. Right.
And then there's a bunch of items, too, that you can use in some of the courses, but those kind of suck. They're interesting, and some of them, like, there's one that turns the ball into a bullet bill, and you ignore all wind, and you just go really, really far.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of great. But then they have stuff where it's like, you hit it here, and then it goes right up into the air, and then comes back down where you aimed it. Mm-hmm. Which is actually kind of good at avoiding extreme wind, I used in one of the tournaments that I played online today.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like kind of not really intuitive into how you control it. There's like another one that turns the ball into a tornado. There's one that turns it's a fire flower, so the ball becomes a fireball, and then basically like burns away any terrain or obstacles you cross.
Mm-hmm.
There's an ice flower that, in theory, keeps you out of like hazards and water damage, but usually I would use the ice flower and then just bounce around the water, and then eventually it would stop and I would fall in the water. And so, like, the items are neat, but I just, when I'm playing a course and I want to try to do well, then I just ignore them and play the course normally.
Right.
Unless I have a bullet bill, because those things are kind of god mode.
But it sounds like they made it pretty optional. I mean, it's not
like
you have to have, you don't have to use an ice flower to get through the stage or anything like that.
Yeah. It's just, if, I mean, if you're in the right spot, you might be able to use it to your benefit. Who knows?
Right, which is good. Have you gotten to experience any of the asynchronous multiplayer?
So it's kind of like, it's not in like, I guess, the traditional, like, you know, iOS, Android, asynchronous.
Mm-hmm.
The way it works is that you go online and there are these different tournaments. There are ones created and hosted by Nintendo. You can make your own. You can also make communities, but that still isn't working yet. I think the way that communities work is kind of similar to Mario Kart 7, or at least that's what it says in the instruction manual.
Mm-hmm.
Where it is like you basically, you know, create a certain rule set and then invite people to it, and then you all just basically play, and then it tracks people's scores on different holes. But they do have a bunch of tournaments that you can create your own with like all sorts of settings, as far as like, you know, using specific clubs, using specific characters, going on a specific course, having different goals in mind, whether it's like, you know, collect a bunch of coins, you know, just regular old lowest score, or who can do it the fastest.
Right.
And those are really neat, because the way that that works is when you're going in a tournament, and keep in mind that this is like the online just went up today, so it wasn't even that populated. But so I'm playing a tournament course. Go online, I enter it, and then as I'm going through the course, I will see like ghosts of every other, maybe not every other player, but a handful of other players and their shots on the same one that I'm going after.
Oh, okay.
So like I'll be able to, you know, see that, hey, I outdrove a bunch of people, or oh man, that motherfucker went way past me. Or that guy sunk a really long putt, good for him.
Right. So kind of more like the time trials in Mario Kart, where you just ghosts are there, but it's not.
That is
a
fantastic comparison, act.
Right.
Feel that for them.
Yeah.
But it is very much like that. It's not like, you know, you're doing a course and then like texting your friend being like, hey, your turn.
Right.
Like,
which,
there is no kind of like, I think there, you can do everyone playing at the same time online. Actually try that. I know a couple people who have copies, and I think that's, you can just do like, you know, the way that the local multiplayer works in this game, which is you're all playing at the same time, but no one, like, you need to all finish the hole in order to move on.
Right. Well, I mean, what I was hoping for was, like you said, you know, like, okay, it's his turn, and when he turns on his 3DS, he'll get a little thing that says, hey, you know, it's your turn in Mario Golf.
Yeah, which, I think the best that you'll have is like, you know, someone plays a round, and then you play a round, and then that person might get some sort of spot pass notification saying like, hey, dude, beat your score.
Right.
Gotta beat it.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I'm super, this is an immediate download buy, so that it never has to leave my 3DS.
Like, and as far as with the asynchronous stuff, like, I think that could be really, like, that could have been really cool, but I don't know if it's necessarily something that I'm like pissed off that it's not in there.
Right.
Like, it's just kind of like, okay, you know what, for the 3DS, I think that kind of makes sense. Because it's not like I'm going to be out, like, you know, at the movies, opening up my 3DS and being like, oh man, I'm connected to 3G on my 3DS for some reason.
Right, and doing one stroke, and then be like, okay, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, I guess sense.
And I think, I haven't tested this yet, I probably will do this tomorrow. I think, like, if I were to download a tournament, I might be able to finish it locally and then upload my score later, but
that would be nice.
I'm not 100% sure about that, because I haven't really tried that yet. I've been in Wi-Fi when I've been playing it.
Right. Well, that would be good, because I'm not in Wi-Fi, so
yeah,
that'd be nice to be able to do that and still sort of have online functionality in a way.
Yeah. But it might be a little rocky launch for Mario Golf World Tour. I mean, they still have a week to iron out the kinks, but it's still a little rough around the edges. It's kind of funny right now, because the downloadable content isn't up, but if you go to the option on the menu, it, like, basically it seems like it's going to work, and then all it does is it puts a loading screen that can't go away unless you turn off the game, that's like, like, you know, setting up extra data on your SD card. But the cool thing about that is that the loading screen for this game is fucking incredible, because it's a bunch of, like, you know, 8-bit Mario sprites with golf balls coming in. So it'll be, like, the golf ball will come into the, almost go in the hole, but it'll hit a like a super mushroom and then get bigger and bounce away, or like a bunch of bullet bills will get fired and then the golf ball will come in and, like, you know, go on top of all the billet bills and then bounce into the hole.
That's why, like, they delayed it a year to add that.
With these retro sound effects. but it is funny because, like, I was, when the online was up, I was like, oh, I'm going to see if the DLC works. Mm-hmm. So I click on that and I'm waiting. I put the system down and I'm still waiting. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And then I realized that, like, I can still go through all the menus in the background.
Hmm.
It's just that I even went in and started playing a round of golf and this loading screen was still there. and then I just turned it off and no problem. I assume that that weird glitch will probably be resolved by the time it comes out. But
yeah.
I'm a little wary that it's going to work without a hitch. But whenever I've actually been playing anything related to the online, it has run fantastic. It's just that it seems like, you know, entering the online world a little rough around the edges.
Right. And it comes out the 2nd of May, right?
Yeah. So it's a week away. Awesome. So, I mean, for all we know, it'll be completely flawless by next week.
Right. That's also the exact day that I have a huge research paper due. So,
yeah. Good reward.
We'll see how that goes.
And I guess to kind of wrap this up, I'm totally going to be making some NWR tournaments. So stay tuned. Right now, I made a tournament. I'll have to see if anybody actually played it. It's called Wario Putts Odd. I couldn't put Putts Weird because Wario Putts game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost like he's like Happy Gilmore putting. I mean, just a lot of the animation of the characters, and I'm kind of excited to see some of the downloadable characters because it looks like Rosalina floats and mm-hmm. Nabbit's a really dumb character.
Oh, I love the focus on Nabbit. He's my favorite new character in such a long time.
I think Nabbit's a fucking awful character, but
he's great in that dumb way, in the way you're like, it's such a stupid character, but you're like, ah, but you can't hate him.
Yeah, I mean, he's like the inverse of Baby Bowser for me, or Bowser Jr., or whatever he's called. Mm-hmm. Because I think that Bowser Jr. is a stupid, stupid, stupid character. But I kind of like Nabbit, and like they both have that dumb little handkerchief thing.
They do, yeah.
It's like, look at my weird smile.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, I'm... Just visually, the game looks super exciting just to look at and to play, even if it's not super interactive courses or whatever. Like,
yeah,
just...
I mean, I think it's one of the prettier 3DS games, too. It just runs really, really smoothly.
Right.
Yeah, I'm excited for more people to play it, because I think if you're into Mario Golf games, fantastic. And as far as a great debate of this versus Hotshots Golf, which is kind of funny, because it's like... There's basically just this one company that, like, split into two different companies that makes all these arcade sports games, or mm-hmm. these arcade golf games, to be specific. Because I think it was originally Camelot, and then Clap Hands or something makes mm-hmm. the Hot Shots Golf games. That's, like, a bunch of ex-Camelot people, or the other way around. Maybe it's ex-Clap Hands people. But I played a bunch of Hot Shots Golf on Vita, and I think the online hooks in that might be a little better. But as far as the actual gameplay... I vastly prefer Mario Golf.
That's excellent, because I've Hot Shots Golf on Vita is my most recent golf game that I actually got into. So hearing that that's an insta buy for me.
Yeah,
Hot Shots Golf was great.
I mean, like, I'm not here to shit on Hot Shots Golf on Vita because it is probably the second best golf game I have played in recent memory.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's parts of that game that are way too convoluted, and I think that Mario Golf, you know, maybe in some respects, like especially with the kind of lackluster single player Castle Club, it might be a little too simple, but for me, I prefer that because it's not as convoluted.
Right. And a lot of it is like, I don't actually know anything about golf for real. So some of the stuff in Hot Shots is a little bit lost on me. I'm like, I don't really know what any of this is.
And I think Mario does a really good job of presenting that in a way that you can learn. Like, there's some pretty solid tutorials in there if you don't know shit about golf.
Mm-hmm.
And even still, like, it's a gentler game, but it's still pretty challenging. Like, the first tournament that you play in Castle Club is kind of piss easy, and the other two are really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I think I said about half a dozen times for both of them, it was probably closer to a full-on dozen playing through those round of 18 holes to try to win the tournament, competing with like Yoshi or Mario or whatever fuckhead is, is like, how do you get an eagle on that hole? It was a, it was a par 4. Like, it took me 3 shots to get to the green. Ah, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
But I can't wait to feel that way about actual human beings and not the computer. And I'm starting to get that.
Definitely.
But I also know that there are going to be people that are going to kick the crap out of me that I don't even know. And I'd rather, you know, start competing with you and all the other people from NWR. And
well, hopefully they'll add in DLC for a throw the putter button.
Yeah.
So when you lose, you can just huck your putter into the crowd.
Yeah, and as far as, how do you feel about the DLC?
I had just recently, I've been so out of the loop with work and school, just recently heard the rumblings that apparently it's $15 DLC.
Well, okay, so the way it works, for people who don't know, is the game is going to be $30 instead of the customary $40.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently only in North America, and like Europe, it's regular normal price.
Because Europe, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be 3 DLC packs. Each DLC pack will have a new playable character and 2 18-hole courses. A lot of them seem to be like remakes of Mario Golf 64 courses.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those packs are going to be $6 each. So for $6 each, you get, you know, a playable character and 2 courses. Which, to me, that doesn't really sound that bad. Or you can buy a season pass where you get all the courses for $50. So you save $3. And then there's also a 4th playable character, Golden Mario, that if you buy the season pass, you have access to him right away. If not, then everyone has access to them after all 3 DLC packs are out.
See, I don't have any problems with that. I mean, $6 for 2 18-hole courses, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot of stuff for $6. I mean, I'll download NES games for $6 after tax that I play for 8 minutes. I'm like, well, I'm done, whatever. You know, I mean, I'd say that's worth it. And I mean, I get I think a lot of Nintendo fans, like, they're still just, it's still kind of new. They're still not quite used to the whole, like, DLC and season pass thing, because it's kind of hitting Nintendo stuff a little bit later than it did some other areas of gaming. So people are, I think we're just kind of feeling those growing pains. I mean, this is how things are, and this is how they're going to be. And it worked for Pikmin 3. I mean, as far as I know, they were pretty successful with the DLC on that. And
definitely.
If it opens up the floor for having long-term DLC, like, if I'm still getting new Mario Golf content a year from now, that's awesome. It's worth it to me.
I don't think that's gonna happen. I think we're gonna get these 3 DLC packs and that's it. And I don't know if I'll really be that upset if that doesn't happen, because it is the kind of thing that I really can't wait for this DLC. It's not that the courses that I'm playing on are getting old, but just having more variety would be even better. Like, because it's already a super fun game, but it is like, I played 2 tournaments back to back that were literally the same fucking courses, which was good because the first one I did kind of crappy on, and then I was able to redeem myself.
Mm.
But it was like, you know, it would have been cooler if there was more to pull from, and soon enough there will be more to pull from.
I don't know. I think Nintendo is still learning the long game strategy of DLC, and I think we're still in that transitionary period where they're kind of like, well, how long do we do the DLC thing for? How, you know, do we do it for a month? Do we do it for 6 months? How long should we drag this out? But I feel like all the DLC and DLC talk that I've seen from them is stuff that seems well worth my money and seems to actually add content. It's not like they're releasing like Mario Golf horse armor for $8. Yeah. Like, it's this is courses and content and characters and stuff I care about. So yeah, I'm fine kicking them $6, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're almost doubling the course, like the amount of holes that you can play in the game for half the price.
Right. And especially since they're knocking $10 off the cost of the game, it's like, well, honestly, I could buy, I mean, I'm not going to spend much more than the cost of a $40 3DS game if I get all of it. You know, so it'd be what? So 6 times 3 is 18, so it'd be $8 more than a normal retail 3DS game.
Yeah.
So, I'm fine with that. I mean, yeah, I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for people to play it. I want to play the DLC. I want to play more of the game. I might do that right after this. play some more tournaments. Check out my Game Boy gear.
Excellent.
And if you have any questions about NES Remix 2 or Mario Golf World Tour, be sure to email us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. And yeah, that's it. Thanks for listening, and thanks for joining me, Justin.
You are welcome, Neil.
Yay! All right, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget, you can send your listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and if you've got a moment, please rate and review the show on iTunes. Now stay tuned for our bonus segment.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this bonus segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Today, I am with Zach Kaplan.
Hey.
I think making your return. You haven't been on in a while, right? You haven't been on since you've kind of come back to the site?
I haven't been on since, I think, DuckTales.
Okay. So, oh, yeah. So it has been a little while. Well, welcome back to Connectivity.
Maybe someone who knows more about the history of Connectivity can tell me.
Well, I mean, I edited it, so if I don't even remember, I'm not going to expect anyone who listens to remember.
But I don't know. There's some passionate fans out there.
There are. That's true. We'll see. Well, if you're out there, Mr. Passionate or Mrs. Passionate fan, let us know. You keep track of appearances of everyone from NWR on the show. That'd actually be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like running spreadsheet or something. Speaking of spreadsheets, which I most closely associate with PCs, today this segment is all about PC gaming. I've been a pretty regular PC gamer for, God, I don't know, 10, 13 years now, I guess, ever since I was a young teenager. And Zach, now you're currently just kind of making your first foray into PC gaming, is that correct?
Yeah, unless playing Club Penguin when I was like, I don't know, maybe elementary school counts.
You have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
So but, I'll count a browser-based game, sure.
Yeah. No, but besides the Old Republic, I haven't really played much PC games.
Oh, but you did play the Old Republic. Okay.
Yeah.
So the reason this whole conversation even came about, and we're going to do this segment, is Zach recently bought the NVIDIA Shield after playing it a bunch of PAX and needed to upgrade what your computer... Well, it started out with just your computer's graphics card. So you could do what, stream, like on Twitch or stuff like that?
Well, I could stream games from the PC to the NVIDIA Shield.
Oh, that's what it's for. Okay. I thought you meant like internet streaming, but it's to actually stream straight from your computer to the Shield.
It's like a remote play on the Vita.
Sure, sure. Or kind of like what the Wii U does with the gamepad.
Yeah, except probably better.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, you can do it anywhere. They updated it recently, so you can do it from like... anywhere you get a fast wireless connection.
Oh, okay, so it is like Vita, yeah, where you can do it, yeah, in complete different households and stuff. That's cool.
That and my current graphics card, I can't... Like, I just bought Force Unleashed 2, of all games.
It's a good game.
Yeah, but, no, so I installed it recently. With my current graphics card, even at lowest settings... it could run, but it was very, very laggy because it was having trouble, like, rendering the graphics and sure. running.
Right.
So, it was due for an upgrade.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a common experience in PC gaming. So why don't you talk a little bit first, before we kind of go into just PC gaming in general, talk about the NVIDIA Shield, because this is kind of interesting. So, you've already mentioned that you can stream from your computer, but right now I know you've been playing games on it, and I imagine that just involves streaming, like, to NVIDIA servers or servers that are hosted by individual people?
Well, they have their... it's in beta. It's called the NVIDIA Grid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's supposed to be only accessible to people in Northern California, but apparently if you have a good enough internet connection, it works anywhere. So it's been working in my house in Massachusetts.
Okay.
So how it works is it streams from their cloud gaming thing.
Yeah.
Games. PC games. So I got access to like 15 free games. Well, free as long as you bought the Shield.
Yeah.
So I've been playing like Saints Row 3 on it. And most of the time it actually runs pretty well. I mean, considering that it's still in beta and that I don't live in Northern California, it runs pretty yeah. well.
Well, I feel like that's always kind of like, for the past 5 or maybe even 10 years, well, probably not that far back, but 5 years, that's kind of been like the... the hope for the future of PC gaming, that we kind of get out of this cycle where you're having to constantly upgrade your PC like you're doing now with, you know, having to upgrade your video card. The idea that, like, well, you can just have a box and you're just going to be streaming everything from outside servers, that, you know, these other computers are going to be doing all the computations and the processing and you're just streaming it.
Well, I think with the Shield, it's more about having a handheld gaming system that lets you play PC games.
Sure. Well, yeah, so this kind of does a little bit of both, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can also play Android games on it with the controller, and there are some good games out there.
Sure, but, oh yeah. Well, I saw, too, you posted on Twitter, you were playing Pilotwings 64. How'd you manage that?
That's with an N64 emulator.
Oh, and like an Android-based N64 emulator?
Yeah, don't tell Nintendo.
But. Well, hopefully they don't listen to this Nintendo podcast. No, I'm sure you're fine. They don't. you're fine. Okay, so that's pretty cool, but so you're enjoying it so far. I mean, especially, considering the fact that you're not even supposed to be able to play these games outside of Northern California, it sounds like your experience has been pretty good.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, it's just a great piece of hardware. Like, I'm still in love with my Vita, but the Shield's getting up there in my obsession with handheld gaming systems, so. Yeah.
Well, and I think the ability to stream straight from your computer is actually very cool. I mean, that idea of making PC games mobile like that, that's huge. I mean, and like the Vita's great, and I love the Vita hardware itself, but I mean, there's people who will say that there's a lot of good games, and there's good indie stuff, but to have the ability to play any PC game on this thing is going to be huge for you.
Well, it's not any PC game. They have to be controller compatible.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, well, that makes sense.
I mean, right now, there's a list of, like, 100 games compatible, but then there's a bunch more that aren't listed but are also compatible.
Right, that, like, maybe aren't, like, perfectly fine-tuned to use the controller, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I know they recently added you can play World of Warcraft on it, but you can hook it up to your TV and then pair a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse and play, like, MMOs with it now.
Okay.
I don't know if they have, like... MOBAs. I don't even know what a MOBA is, actually.
Oh, man.
Those kind of games.
Yeah, like League of Legends, Defense of the Ancients, that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it might support some of those games, I don't know.
That's cool.
But recently, a game that came out recently, I mean, I'm not going to play it, but South Park Stick of Truth. Mm-hmm. That game, you can play it on the Shield, you can stream it. I'm trying to think of other recent games, but not a lot has come out this year on PC, has there been?
I mean, there's, like, some things. It just kind of depends. Like, the latest Diablo expansion just came out, Reaper of Souls. And, I imagine if you can do World of Warcraft by doing a Bluetooth.
I don't think Diablo 3 is compatible.
Oh, really?
But, I know there's a bunch of games coming out that will be compatible. Like,
yeah.
A game, Watch Dogs, is going to be able to run on it.
Yeah.
And, well, considering, back to the Vita for a second, the Vita is getting Borderlands 2, and I was planning on getting it, possibly the bundle with the Slim, but now that I have the Shield, I think, like, well, I could play the Borderlands 2 PC version, which looks better on my Shield. Or I could play it on the Vita, which doesn't look or run as well. Right. So.
Yeah. There you go. So, yeah, that's really cool, actually. So, apart from being able to stream the games right now from California, which you're not even really supposed to be able to do, is the main way you would use it just by streaming stuff from your PC? I mean, that's you'd buy games on your PC and just stream them? Is that the main way you'd use it right now?
Well, it's a portion of the Shield, because there's a big emphasis on its... Tegra processor-based games that are supported on Android or something. Like, okay. They recently added The Walking Dead Season 1. You can play on Android. And then a lot of Android games that aren't necessarily, like, made for the Shield, you can map the controls.
Right.
To the controller. And it downloads it automatically, like, from a cloud-based server of people submit the... mapped controls, so it downloads it automatically.
Oh, nice.
And that works pretty well with games that use controls like that. There's a Mass Effect game on Android. It's kind of crappy, but...
but it works.
Yeah, it works with the controller, while a game like Simpsons Tapped Out or the new Family Guy Android game, where it's you tap and you move stuff, that's a little more clunky because
I would imagine it's
like moving around a mouse cursor.
Yeah, so. That makes sense. Because the NVIDIA, the screen on it isn't a touchscreen, right?
No, it is a touchscreen.
Oh, it is? Okay. So could you just use that for those types of games?
Yeah, you can, but the controller is, I mean, it's not as comfortable, but...
Right, because the screen's kind of on... It almost looks like a regular game controller with just sort of a screen stuck on top of it.
It works, though.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's cool.
You can, but it's really awkward. Play games in portrait mode. Like, games like... Stupid games like, what is it called? Jungle Run?
Jungle Run, yeah.
Yeah, those would be hard to play because of how the shield is built.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah. Because don't those go... Are those in portrait or no? Those are vertical, aren't they? Or is that in portrait? I'm not sure.
No, when it's vertical, it's portrait, I think. Horizontal is landscape.
Oh, landscape, duh. Yeah, you're right. So, yeah, anything up and down like that, yeah, would be kind of difficult. You just turn the whole thing on its side, I guess.
Yeah, but there's plenty of other great stuff to play.
Right. So, let's talk a little bit about the PC gaming side of things. And I think you've kind of had your first big, like, leap into, modifying your home computer. So, before trying to get this shield to work with streaming, you've never really... Sounds like you've never done much, tinkering inside of your computer.
No, not at all. I mean, it's my family's computer, so if I had even thought about it, my mom would be like, you're not touching it. But my parents got a new laptop, and so they're like, whatever, now.
They're kind of on that more, and so, yeah, you get a little more free reign with the PC.
Fun fact for listeners, I am still the youngest person on staff currently, so...
Are you 17 now? Or 16?
Yeah, 17.
17. Okay, that's what I thought.
I'm still younger than everyone else.
Yeah?
Apparently.
That sounds right.
I think I am.
I would think so, yeah. I don't think we've got any other high schoolers running around.
Someone got, a negative birthday. I don't know if that's
someone's,
possible.
Someone's, Benjamin Buttoning.
Yeah.
Maybe. So, kind of like, I had that similar experience. I was a little bit younger than 17 when I first started, cracking open my computer and trying to mess with it. I was probably 13 or 14 trying to play games like the original StarCraft and Half-Life and getting those to run. But I feel like upgrading your video card is that first, big, step into PC gaming. It's like a rite of passage, really. And I know you were talking on Twitter about, picking out a card and you know, maybe having, Best Buy install it versus installing it yourself. Now, I know you had to get a different power supply because your power supply didn't supply enough pack for this punch, I should say, maybe for this video card. But did you actually put the card in yourself? Did you do that, or are you just having them do everything?
I'm having Best Buy put in the power supply, tonight. So,
and then you'll put in the card when you get it back?
Yeah, well, I'm getting it back tomorrow, but then I have a friend coming over Thursday who's into PC gaming. So I'd rather have him, help me, show me how to unscrew it the right way.
Right, yeah, I think it's always good to kind of have that guidance the first time, sure.
Yeah. I mean, after the graphics card, when I have some more money, now that I've been looking into it, I'd like to get some more RAM.
Yeah, RAM's another real easy thing to swap out.
Yeah, because mine has, 3.75 usable gigs of RAM.
Oh, yeah, you're going to definitely want to knock that up.
So, right now, it'll be able to run the games I want to run, but, games like Watch Dogs coming out, that requires at a minimum 6 gigabytes.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, so that's going to have to get bumped up. Those are usually the two, easiest sort of quick fixes you can do to an existing computer, throw a new video card in it or upgrade the RAM. Eventually, you know, motherboards and processors and all that stuff. But it sounds like this family computer is recent enough that I don't think you have to worry about all that quite yet.
Well, I don't know. Is 2009 really recent?
Oh, wow. Is it that old?
But
yeah, I don't know, actually.
It runs pretty well still.
Yeah.
I've been able to, I don't know. It's been running so well since I got it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like once you start with the video card, that's like a gateway drug. Soon you're going to start monitoring all this different stuff. I mean, now you're already swapping out the power supply. You're looking into RAM and, yeah, the motherboard and the processor, that's going to be the next thing for you. And then before you know it, you're going to be building your own little PCs.
Yeah, I still don't understand how you build a PC.
It's not that hard. So I'm on a computer now that I just built about a month or 2 months ago. Well, no, probably about a month ago now. It's not too bad. I mean, once you get, I honestly think the hardest thing is just the power supply and like getting all the wires connected to the motherboard and the different components. That to me like always takes me the longest for some reason. But everything else, I mean, it's everything has a place. And so as long as you buy compatible stuff, so you don't want to buy like a motherboard that only supports AMD processors and then you buy like an Intel, that would be bad. But usually you can get those bundled together when you buy them, like from Tiger Direct or something. So everything just kind of snaps in. It's almost like putting together a Lego set that's like only got a few places where you can put things.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly easy. I mean, you'll see once you put in the video card, like once your friend helps you. I mean, your computer's going to have 2 to 4 slots. They're all lined up next to each other, and that's like the only place the video card can go. I mean, there's no way you could put that video card in the wrong place.
I don't know. I think I could find a way.
You'd have to try real hard to do that. And I feel like it's easier now with video cards, at least. Because when I was doing it, there was PCI, and there was, I think, AGP was the other type of like adapter, basically, in the bottom of the card. And so you had to already like either have your computer's manual or open up your computer and look at the port to be able to tell what you needed of those two types of video cards. And now there's just PCI. And there's some differences. There's PCI and PCI Express and stuff, but it's all fairly universal now. It's much easier than it was 10 years ago when I was trying to do this, more than 10 years ago.
Kids have it easy.
You guys do. Everything always gets easier. But no, I'm excited for you. I think building PCs is a lot of fun, and I know... Like for a long time, you know, within the Wii era, the meme was Wii 360. But I honestly think with a Wii U and a PC, you're fairly set. The only thing you really miss are just sort of like Sony exclusives, Sony first party stuff. But most of the Microsoft first party stuff comes out on PCs, save for Halo at this point. You know, like Titanfall and stuff
well,
like that.
Titanfall's on PC.
Exactly, that's what I mean. So, like, most of Microsoft stuff comes out on PC.
Oh, yeah,
too. So I feel like you don't really, like, if you can get a Wii U and then just get, like, a pretty good computer, you can play, like, the majority of games that come out, save for, just Sony exclusives, like The Last of Us and everything like that.
At PAX East, they actually had Titanfall playable on the Shield.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it played fine, or at least...
That's awesome.
I mean, they have it set up in its optimum conditions.
But... Of course, yeah.
But I say, that's cool. I mean, they're not using, though, the excuse if it doesn't work well. They don't do the Nintendo thing where it's like, can everybody please turn off your Wi-Fi?
Yeah, like there's too many signals bouncing around.
We're so sorry, but you need to turn off your phones because our Wii won't work.
There you go. Yeah, well, that's cool. Yeah. I think PC gaming is great. And really, once you crack open that computer, it's not as intimidating as it seems. And I think it's a lot harder to mess things up than you would think. I mean, did you ever? I know you're younger, but have you messed around with the N64? Like, have you changed out the little RAM pack in the front of the system ever?
I just bought an N64 2 months ago.
Okay.
So no.
I wonder if it's do you know that little like door that opens on the very
front of it?
Oh
yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
That little jumper pack. Eventually they released a RAM upgrade for games like Donkey Kong and playing multiplayer and Perfect Dark and stuff.
Yeah, well, Donkey Kong needed it because of a glitch.
Is that really?
Yeah, it the reason they released it is they couldn't figure out how to fix the glitch unless you had the
more
expansion.
RAM.
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. I didn't know that. But really, like swapping that thing out is about as difficult as swapping out RAM in a PC and a video card, for that matter. So, no, you'll be fine. I'm excited for you. I just think back to me being a kid and doing this for the first time, and I just get excited. I don't know. I get nostalgic for it, I guess.
Something I really like is that PC games are really cheap.
A lot of times, yeah. Now that a lot of times you do get bad ports.
That's true.
Especially games that are optimized.
Well,
for
I meant cheap,
and
like inexpensive, like
no, yeah, absolutely. And they get cheap much faster, especially with Steam sales.
But
and stuff
yeah, there
like that.
Is a problem I've heard with some of the ports of games being subpar.
Well, yeah, things will be well. It might not be so bad for you because you're using something with a controller like innately built in.
Yeah,
but a lot of times now, I mean. The lead design is, 360 or PS3 or I guess now Xbox One and PS4. And so things aren't really optimized for keyboard and mouse, which is how I prefer to play most of my games on PC. So that can be an issue sometimes, and sometimes there can be performance issues. But you'll find, especially if you beef up your computer that, for the most part, actually games look even, I mean, play and look better on the PC compared to their console counterparts. So,
do you download all your games?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. PC. I don't know the last. I mean, the last game I probably bought on like DVDs was maybe StarCraft II, like 5 years ago, I guess. No, everything I get through Steam or Blizzard's online store or Origin or yeah, anything like that.
Wait, people use Origin?
Yeah, if you have to. I mean, EA's games are only on Origin now. They used to be on Steam, but not anymore. So if you want to play Dead Space 3 or...
Microtransactions Horror Game 3.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, the game was not very good. Or if you want to play any Sims games, yeah, you got to use Origin. But Origin's not that bad. It'd just be nicer to have everything consolidated in Steam. Like, well, that's my issue.
I had just bought two games on disc because they were cheaper than it was to download. I got Dishonored for $10, which came with a Steam code.
Nice.
So basically, I didn't even have to put in the disc. I just entered in the code.
The download code, and yeah, just use the disc as a coaster.
Well,
yeah.
The other I got was Force Unleashed for like $7, which was good. But it requires the disc to be in it, so...
Oh, man. Yeah,
I had to download a disc. So, if I want... What I did was I downloaded a disc emulator, and it copies the disc to the computer, so it makes it seem like it's always in.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But the pain is that now it's, like, saved to the PC twice.
Right, well, because you have the game installed, and then you have all the data of the disc saved. It's probably an ISO file, I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, the next thing I'd like to do upgrading-wise is get either an external hard drive or a new internal hard drive, because I'm at, after installing all these emulators for, like, PS2 and GameCube...
You're probably filling up quick, right?
I have 70 gigs left.
Well, how big was the hard drive to begin with? 500?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I've had it since, like, 2009.
Right. But hard drives are super cheap. I mean, especially internal hard drives. You could get another internal 500-gig hard drive for, like, under $75. No
because,
problem.
Well, one of my problems is that I rip all my movies on Blu-ray, and then I save them all onto my computer so I can...
Yeah, that'll eat up space, too. Well, in that case, you might want to just get, yeah, just double down on a really big... either external or internal drive. External, maybe. But...
I mean, I can press them down, because if I just leave them as the files they were, then that'd be crazy.
Right. Absolutely.
No, I can press them. But still, that takes up a lot of space. I have, like, over 150 gigs worth of movies and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Yeah, you're gonna need something. I would just, in that case, if you're going to do all that, I probably would just get an external, because that'll make it easier, too, if you ever build or buy a whole new computer. You can just plug in your external hard drive with all your movies and music and all that kind of stuff saved on it. What I would do is I would put all that stuff on an external drive, but then still save your games and stuff on the internal drive, because putting them on the external drive is not going to do you any good when you upgrade to a new computer. You'll just have to reinstall them anyway, because they won't be in that computer's registry and all that garbage, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would do it that way. But no, that's cool. That's awesome. You get me all pumped, man. I love talking PCs. It's cool. I put a Blu-ray player in my PC for some reason.
I got an external hard drive because, like, mine didn't come with a Blu-ray. I bought an external drive like a year or two ago.
An external Blu-ray drive? Yeah.
Yeah. It was only like $30.
Yeah. The drives usually aren't too bad. That's cool. Well, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to hearing more stories about your PC exploits.
I think you're more excited about it than I am.
I just love PCs. I mean, I just, like, when I built this computer a month ago, like, it was like Christmas for me as everything came in the mail, and it was so exciting. Yeah, it's just fun. But of course, like, I hit the normal, like, PC wall that people hit while building these things or just trying to upgrade things, where it took me forever to figure out why my new computer wouldn't, like, register my video card. Like, it just would not recognize it. And I found out my brother, and this is what I'm talking about, my motherboard has, I want to say, two or three, like, PCI, like, 3.0 slots, and then one 2.0 slot at the very bottom. And my video card apparently only supports 2.0, and I had never tried plugging it into the very bottom slots. Like, after 3 days, I finally just, like, was like, well, I'm going to try this, and then I guess I'm just going to go buy a new card if that doesn't work. And then finally that did the trick, and I did not know that was a thing. So now it's something I'll know and know to look for in the future when I build these things, but... Yeah, you always kind of come across something like that, but it's fun.
Or you could just spend, like, $2,500 on one of those Alienware gaming PCs.
Yeah, I feel like I built something equivalent to that for like under $800. I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to do it the hard way.
It's fun, though. To me, it's like the modern equivalent of kind of like a guy who like rebuilds an old car in his garage or something. Like, to me, that's like, it's like my version of that. I will never, ever do anything to a car, but I will always build PCs from here on out.
See, the thing is, with a car, you go into that and you risk your life, like, driving it. Every time you get in a car, you could die.
Yeah, that's true. I guess at worst, yeah, what? Like, my computer just doesn't turn on and I have to figure out what I did wrong.
Well, at worst, your computer could, like, blow up or something.
I'd have to mess things up pretty bad for it to blow up, I think. I think for the most part, it just would not turn on or wouldn't run very well. So,
yeah.
But cool. Well, good luck, Zach. I look forward to hearing how things are once you get that video card in there and put some more RAM in there. I think you'll be pleasantly, you know, very happy with the experience in streaming to your NVIDIA Shield there.
I'm just excited to finally be a part of the Master Race.
Yeah, the PC Master Race. That's right.
Yep.
We'll have to get you playing, like, all Blizzard's games, even though they might not work on your Shield, but you'll just have to sit at your computer and play them and get on that. That'll be good.
Yeah.
If you'd like to follow along, Zach, with his PC exploits, you can follow him on Twitter at Steel Diver. I feel like someday you're going to get a letter from Nintendo and be like, yeah, we want that name. You're going to have to give that to us.
Yeah, if Steel Diver ever becomes really popular.
the new one.
That's true. Sub Wars.
Free-to-play one was actually very good, I thought. And then, yeah, if you want to follow me, as I just encourage Zach as he plays PC stuff, as always, I'm at OKSoda on Twitter. So, yeah, maybe we'll talk in, like, a couple weeks or a couple months and just see how things are going for you once you've, like, built this. I bet, like, in 2 months you'll have already built, like, this brand-new computer that's just going to be badass. Like, that's what all your graduation money will go to when you graduate high school, which I guess probably, what, you're a junior year now, right?
Yeah.
So it's still a year out. That's what I did with all my graduation money. What's college? I don't know. So Zach, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your stories.
You're welcome. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. And we will talk to you guys later.
Bye.